sleep. Debate.
Okay, we're recording on the cloud. Well, hello, girls and gays.
Hello, girls, gays, bays, and frays.
Everyone. Welcome back to Rate, Debate, Recreate. I'm Sammy Purcell.
And I'm Logan Keller.
We are back for episode 3 of this season. Super exciting, flying through.
Yeah.
Logan, I have a question for you.
An answer for you.
All right. Have you ever participated in a drag show? Not been to one, but participated.
Okay, well, first of all, I've been to about 500.
I know, that's why I'm not asking that question.
I can't say that I've ever, like, 100% done the whole thing and done drag. Mm-hmm. I've, like, definitely played around with makeup and outfits and drag before.
Mm-hmm.
And I have also performed multiple times on stage at drag shows, but not in drag.
I think everyone's been on stage at play that I know. So.
Yeah. But has everyone won $600 from play by winning the student body contest?
No, that's true. I was wondering how long it'd take to bring up the student body contest. Oh, wow. That took not all of 2 minutes. Good for you.
Also, everyone, play is a gay bar in Nashville that Sammy and I used to frequent.
Yes.
And would still frequent if we still lived in Nashville.
Absolutely. Every day of my life. Wednesdays.
Yeah. It's still, I have lived in New York for 4 years now and have access to like such a more expansive gay scene.
Mm-hmm.
And still play is my favorite gay bar. Like I've been to gay bars in LA, DC, New York, like everywhere. But some, I don't know, part of it feels to me like it's this, like, haven in, not that Nashville is, like, not a queer-friendly place, but definitely not to the extent of the other cities I mentioned.
Sure.
And play is kind of, like, one of the main and only places, and I feel like something about that just makes it so special.
Yeah, you're right. It does feel, like, safe. It's really nice in there. It's always a good time. Oh, I miss it. Well, enough reminiscing. So for those of you who are new to Rate, Debate, Recreate, we'll just explain what the show is about. So each week, Logan and I choose a musical based on a category, and we rate that show on a scale of 1 to 10, debate which one is better, and then think of one aspect or a few aspects that we might change and recreate it, because as we've stated many times before, we are the experts on this subject.
Oh, yeah.
We can do
that. That's why we were renewed for season 2.
Yes. Yes, the overlords at iHeartRadio were like, we got to pick you guys back up.
Yeah.
I don't know
if I'm allowed to say
that.
Thanks for paying us. Thanks for our
sponsorship. Yes, thanks, Smile Direct Club. We love you.
That just means we have to get sponsored before we post this episode.
I know. Well, shit, I just said Smile Direct Club. So. Anyway, this week, our category is Life's a Drag. And my show is Cabaret.
And my show is Kinky Boots.
I'm so excited. I have so much to say, so much to go through.
I have so many thoughts about both of these shows.
Oh my god, me too. Okay, so let's get started. Let's get into it. So we're just going to go through a summary of each show. So I'll start with Cabaret, and I'm going to be very generic because there are multiple variations of this musical, as I learned
when I watched
the movie, and I was extremely confused because it was not what I thought happened at all. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh. So I'm just going to be super generic. Cabaret is a musical that was adapted from a book and a play, which I'll get into. It's set in about 1929, 1930 in Berlin during the end days of the Weimar Republic, just as the Nazis were ascending to power. And it focuses on this nightclub called the Kit Kat Club and kind of revolves around a writer named Cliff Bradshaw and his relationship with an English cabaret singer named Sally Bowles. And there's a bunch of stuff that goes on, and overseeing kind of the entire plot is the master of ceremonies at the Kit Kat Club, and the club itself and he kind of serve for as like a metaphor for the soul and the politics of Germany at the time and everything that was going on, and they kind of interweave in that respect. So I'm going to stop there because there is a lot of detail to get into.
Who knows what's past that.
But yeah. which I will get into, but I am actually going to rate the movie, which is directed by Bob Fosse and came out in the 70s, 72. And I'm also going to rate the, I think it was like 1994. Let me make sure that's correct in a minute. 1993 London Revival. So I'm going to rate those two things. And the 1993 London Revival is directed by Sam Mendes of 1917 fame, which you might, that surprised me. I had no idea. So the movie, I'm going to give 7 out of 10 Alan Cumming beautifuls. And Sam Mendes version, I'm going to give 9.5 out of 10 beautifuls, because everyone is beautiful at the Kit Kat Club.
That's true. Okay, I'll talk about Kinky Boots for a little bit. I also want to do a pretty pared down summary. Basically, the story follows two main protagonists, Charlie Price and Simon slash Lola. So Simon's a drag queen, so in drag she goes by Lola. And they meet in like unusual circumstances in London. You start learning about Charlie, and he basically inherited his father's family business that has been in the family for four generations. And it's basically an expectation that he is going to be a shoemaker, like his dad and his grandpa and his great-grandpa. But that's not what Charlie wants to do. Charlie has bigger dreams of moving to London with his girlfriend Nicola and selling real estate and marketing.
Dreams.
And then pan to Lola. She's a drag queen performing in London. You find out, like, kind of at the beginning, she has a rocky, you don't really know to what extent at the beginning, but she has a rocky relationship with her dad, and meets Charlie when she gets into a fight, when she's like getting mugged, but is clearly able to stand up for herself mm-hmm. just fine, and breaks her boot, her red boot. And so that kind of sparks an idea with Charlie to have on a way to save the shoe factory, which is kind of going bankrupt. And he decides to make this new niche market of making boots for drag queens, because typical, this is all in the context of the show. I don't know to what extent this is real IRL. But,
I think it's based on a true story, right?
I meant what I was about to say, though, is like the whole concept is that drag queens can't, like, their weight can't.
Oh, yeah.
Bear the women's heels that are available. So the idea is that they need to make like reupholstered, like stronger heels that are also like really camp and fabulous for drag queens. So that's basically the premise. And Lola starts designing shoes with Charlie, and they start making them together. And the whole build up is for this fashion show in Milan that they're going to perform at and kind of like try and save the factory. So yeah, that's Kinky Boots. I have had the privilege of seeing Kinky Boots twice. once I saw the national tour back in 2015 in Nashville. And then I saw the Broadway version in like 2018, I think. I am going to give Kinky Boots 8.5 out of 10. I don't know how I want to say this. Okay, I'm going to say the whole quote. I was just going to say one word, but I'm going to say the whole quote. Okay. I'm going to give Kinky Boots 8.5 out of 10 irresistible tubular sex. That's how Lola describes what a kinky boot for a drag queen should look like.
Okay. Oh, God, I'm going to have to say that. Okay. All right. I'm going to give Kinky Boots 7 out of 10 irresistible tubular sexes.
And I'm going to give Cabaret. So in preparation for this, I watched a stage version, but I have seen the movie as well. I haven't seen the movie recent enough to give it its own rating, so I'm just going to give a blanket rating of 8.5 as well. The 8.5, what is it?
Beautifuls.
Beautifuls out of 10.
Like, God bless Alan Cumming, honestly.
Literally.
Okay, so let's get started. I'll go first just because I have a lot to say.
Yeah, so, I want to hear it too.
Yeah, so the way I'm going to kind of structure this is I'm going to talk about what it's based on, what the show originally was, what the movie made the show, and then kind of what different versions have looked like since then. Because what's fun about Cabaret is, like, there's, like, so much packed into it, and you can do a lot with the same material, which is great. Anyway.
I definitely feel like Cabaret is one of the shows that has, like, evolved the most since its original, like, kind of like a Chicago, like, the Chicago now is so different than the original version. Like, Cabaret now... it's so different. And I feel like it's a show that is, it's, I think it's meant to be like that. Like, it's meant to just evolve over time. And since it's not like a really specific plot focused musical, like there is a plot, but it's not, it's more thematic. I think you can update those themes throughout time, which is really cool.
And what's really interesting, and like, I have never been able to see the 1966 version, because I was not.
What?
But, like, there's so much in Cabaret that can be offensive, and that can be, like, it can just, like, evolve, and I think, like, the themes are, like, so, not broad, but kind of broad in a way that, like, something that, like, might have been offensive in 1966, someone can look at that now and be like, okay, well, like, here's how we can alter that to make it still poignant and still maybe not great, but we're actually trying to make a point. Anyway, let's go. So... the original musical debuted in 1966. It's music by John Kander, lyrics by Fred Webb, and book by Joe Mastroff. And it was based on a play from 1951 called I Am a Camera, which is adapted from a novel called Goodbye to Berlin by the American writer Christopher Isherwood. I believe he was American. Yes. So in 1929, Isherwood went to Berlin, and it was kind of during the final months of what they called the Golden 20s. So that's like our Roaring 20s. They called it Golden. And he was a novelist. He was pretty politically indifferent about the rise of fascism, which is kind of like what this musical and the story really focuses on is what can happen when people are indifferent to extremist politics, really. So he was politically indifferent. He didn't really care. He only went to Berlin because he wanted to, like, live openly as a gay man and enjoy the, like, quote-unquote depravity of the city and its cabarets. And he shared a room there with a 19-year-old British cabaret singer named Jean Ross. And as the story goes in his novel, she later became pregnant, and she thought the father was this jazz pianist. His name is Peter Van Eyck. He later became, like, a pretty famous actor. But he's a jazz pianist at the time, and he abandoned her, and she went to get an abortion, and Isherwood pretended to be the father so she could, basically. And she almost died. It went, like, horribly wrong. So that's, like, where the core story of Cabaret kind of still resides in all of the different iterations of it, between, like, the relationship between those two people. And when it became a musical, there are some changes from the source material. So the male protagonist, still a writer, and they had an anti-Semitic landlady in the book, and she's changed to the more accepting landlady, Fräulein Schneider, who we see in the musical, adaptation, not the movie adaptation, who has a fling, a romance with a Jewish man. And they also got rid of some characters and then added the Nazi smuggler, who is prevalent in the musical, not the movie. So now I'm going to go through the different versions. We're going to go OG musical, movie, Sam Mendes version, and then kind of dabble in some others. So, in the original, Cliff Bradshaw, straight American writer. I've never seen a production of this version, so I'm not sure how they played his sexuality, but in the Wikipedia explanation of what happens, he explicitly becomes intimately involved with Sally, and he could be the father of her child. And from reading it, it seems like his rejection of Sally initially comes from a place of pride and not her not necessarily living up to what he thinks a woman should be. That seems to be, like, the core part of the rejection, which, like, that can be fascinating within itself as, like, an exploration of, like, toxic masculinity or whatever it may be. The movie. So 1972, Cliff Bradshaw becomes Brian Roberts, who is not American, he is British, and he is an academic who came to Berlin to finish his doctorate in philosophy, I believe. And it's hinted throughout the movie that he is possibly attracted to men in like kind of some like kind of cagey ways until he outright says he is. And like, I think the best line, the best exchange in the movie, which I'll get into anyway. So Sally Bowles is American. I'm not really sure why. I think it might have been just because Liza Minnelli is, and they maybe she can, I don't know.
A
I don't
Sandy, want to talk about her accent. A Sandy work. Situation.
Yeah, so she's American. Fräulein Schneider and Herr Schultz are cut, so that's the romantic connection between the landlady and the Jewish man who's like a grocer. And characters are added. So they were in, I think they were actually in the original book, so they were like taken from the source material and put back. So you've got Natalia and Fritz, and they kind of come in and be the love story. Natalia is this rich Jewish heiress, and Fritz is poor, and he's in love with her, but she can't marry him because she's afraid he only wants her for her money, and he is not Jewish. But then plot twist, he is Jewish. He's just been hiding it because he's worried about what his friends will think. So he tells her, and they get married. And then you've got Maximilian, who I think gives the movie its like best and maybe problematic storyline, but we'll get to that. So Sally and Brian, who are the main characters, begin sleeping together. And then Sally meets Maximilian, who's this like rich German. He's not a Nazi, but he's, again, like politically indifferent, like most of the characters in the movie and show are. So Sally meets Max, and she's attracted to his wealth. And she introduces him to Brian, who's jealous, maybe, but of whom? Who's to say? And then the three of them go on this like wild vacation, and you get the sense that Max is flirting with both of them, and it's revealed during a fight, which is a great scene between Sally and Brian after Max leaves, that he has been screwing them both. And the way it's the way it's like revealed is Brian goes, "Screw Max," and Sally goes, "I do," and then Brian goes, "So do I." And I just like, I gasped. I was like, wow, that was great. And then despite another change is despite the like, quite honestly, kind of sexless chemistry between Liza Minnelli and Michael York, who plays Brian, I don't think they have sexual chemistry at all. The movie feels slightly more romantic, like maybe this time, which was created for the movie, it was not in the original show, is much more romantic. And it doesn't actually happen in the London revival. That song, I think, is cut. But when it is in the actual musical, it comes at a time right after the Cliff character has been like, "I'll help you take care of your baby." She's like, "Okay, great." And in the movie, it just comes when she decides, like, they get together for the first time. It's like different context a little bit. And then the way they part ways is like pretty bittersweet instead of just bitter.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of bitter in the show. Okay, so here we go. The Sam Mendes 1993 London revival. You've got Alan Cumming as the MC, which is a big, the way he plays that role is like a big departure from how the role has normally been played. The role was made kind of iconic by Joel Grey, whom I love, and I still think is like quite sexy. Thank you very much, playing the MC.
Oh my god, yeah, and Anything Goes.
Yes, oh my god, he's great. But he does play the MC as sort of this like, he's not sexless, but he's like asexual he's like asexual almost. Like he's like the way his like makeup is, he's dressed in a tux, like he's very covered. It's hard to describe it. He's over the top and he's representative of like the soul of Germany in a way that is devious, but not overtly sexual.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Cumming, on the other hand,
sex.
Is like a full-on sexual maniac. Like he's touching people's breasts, he's grabbing people's crotches, he's grabbing his own crotch, he's wearing like this like suspender type thing with his chest out and his nipples are like painted red. Like it's very, very overtly sexual and like kind of representative of like the, it's weird because it's representative of like the things the Nazis wanted to stamp out, but he is also representative of the evil of the Nazis at the same time. So like the way they're kind of conjoined is really interesting. But anyway, Alan Cumming, God bless him. He did not have to go that hard.
Everyone.
It
was a Shrek reference.
That's like a
God bless
Tiny
him,
Tim
everyone.
Reference. That's the Christmas Carol. Anyway, so other kind of changes. So originally in the stage musical, the song Tomorrow Belongs to Me is like sung by a choir in the context, or like sung in the context of the cabaret. Like it's a person singing it. And in the 1993 London revival, the MC listens to a recording and like stops it. And this revival, I think, like incorporates the MC in a lot of other interesting ways. Like he's always kind of coming in and out of the action. And it's really interesting the way they incorporate the cabaret into the rest of the show. The biggest difference to this stage version, I think, besides Alan Cumming, is the references to Cliff's bisexuality. So he like literally kisses a man in the show. Mm-hmm. And there are references to him hooking up with a man at a bar. And I'm also fairly certain that he and Sally are not sexually involved. He just offers to help her. But I do think that he is attracted to her in some respect, although I'm not sure it's physically. And the way his, like, the way his sexuality is portrayed in this version is different than the movie to me, because I think the movie is a little more condemning of, like, homosexual or gayness than the 1993 stage version is. But I'll get into that. And then the 1998 Broadway revival, I just want to touch on really quickly. So Alan Cumming was also in this one, and it was Natasha Richardson, rest in peace, love her. But one thing I did want to touch on is in this rendition of Two Ladies, which is like a song performed by the MC and Two Ladies, this revival had a girl and a boy in drag do it. So like we can talk about how trans representation in the show as well, which is interesting. But those are the big differences wanted to touch on. And then I kind of want to open up and I'll say what I think as far as this show's take on gender and sexuality, because I think that's like obviously, the political indifference is a big theme here, and, like, the depravity and the political indifference kind of, like, coalesce in this really, honestly, like, harrowing way. But I think the show and movie have sort of interesting things to say about gender and sexuality in the midst of everything about the politics. And I think, like, I specifically want to talk about Michael York, and then Adam Godley is the guy who plays Cliff in the
93
Sam version. Yes. So we're going to talk about Michael York and Adam Godley and like the way they're different. And I'm going to refer to them as Brian and Cliff because they're Brian and Cliff. So I think Michael York, he just feels extremely European to me in that movie. And I don't know if he is like European, actually. I'm not sure. But I think the kind of throuple that they've got going on with Max is a really interesting, I think if you think about it as Max being like this incarnate of like richness, he's very Aryan looking, he's very German, he's like kind of everything that Brian hates at this point. Like Brian is the one in the show, in the movie, who is not politically indifferent, and he is like always talking about how the Nazis are bad. He gets beat up by some Nazis, but he is not politically indifferent, is different to everyone around him. And I think when Sally introduces Max to Brian, we're supposed to kind of pick up on it as like, oh, he's like, his jealousy stems from being jealous of Sally, or like being jealous of the way Sally is drawn to this man. But I really think it's more of he is attracted to that man while he still represents everything he hates.
Uh-huh.
So I think if you read Brian as, like, if you read Max as, like, that inherent quality that Brian hates, like, he hates the ambivalence, he hates everything that Max stands for, but I am a little worried about that because I think that can also read as him hating, like, a certain queer desire that he has, mm-hmm. And Charles Isherwood, like, really didn't like the movie, I think, for that reason. He thought it portrayed homosexuality in a really negative light. And I think, like,
that's interesting.
Yeah. And I think, like, because I really like the idea of, like, in theory, like, the metaphor of, like, being attracted to this thing that you hate, being attracted to the like opulence of it and the richness of it, while you know that everything going on over here is like really fucked up and you can't let that distract you. But I do see how you could read that as like a queer desire being something that he hates about himself.
Yeah, I do too. Here's my take though, is that I think that that experience is part of the queer experience still today, and especially in the 70s when that came out. Like, I don't know, I think it's extremely progressive
for the 70s.
Yeah, I agree. But I don't know that I think that that's like a problematic element that he hates inside himself, what he sees in Max, because I think that's like a really legitimate experience that a lot of queer people go through. Is like, I can remember times in, especially in like high school when I was really closeted, where I like really, really, I wouldn't like verbally say things about this, but inside I really, really hated seeing like really feminine men because I didn't like that part about myself. And so like seeing it in another person made me kind of like cringe because it's this part of myself that I didn't like. And I don't know that portraying that in and of itself is necessarily a bad thing. Sure. I totally see what Isherwood is saying with like, I don't think it's the biggest promotion of homosexuality that could have been made. And maybe that is what needed to happen, you know, in the 70s. But at the same time, I don't know, part of me is like, I think that's a really valid experience.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I do think the movie, like, the movie does a couple of other things in terms of, like, Sally and Brian's relationship. Like I said, they change, they don't change the ending. They still end up parting ways. So basically what happens is, I guess I haven't said this, is Sally gets pregnant. And in the movie, it could be Brian's child, it could be Max's. That's kind of the way they play it. But Brian is like, oh, whatever, I'll take care of it, I don't care. And then she gets
the words every mother wants to hear.
He says it much more nicely than that. He's basically like, I don't care, it's my kid, you know, like that's like the and then she gets an abortion without telling him. And in the stage version, he still gets mad in the movie, but in the stage version he like blows up, he hits her, he gets very upset, and they leave on completely embittered terms. It's not good.
Yeah, not bittersweet.
Yes. And I think in the movie, they play up this, it's kind of weird to me, which is why I docked it a little bit, because I, part of me thinks it on purpose, it's on purpose, but I think they're like, Liza Minnelli and Michael York have like zero sexual chemistry. And I think that's interesting in terms of his character, and I do think he likes her a little bit, but it is interesting to me that they like push to make the movie end on like a lighter note for them, on a slightly more romantic note than it does in the show. Cause in the stage show, it's awful. And he talks about, I think like the last line he has as he's leaving Germany is something about like, Sally and I were dancing and we were asleep the whole time or something like that. But I do think that the stage version, the Adam Gottlieb version, is, I think, slightly, I don't know, it's just slightly more interesting too, in the way that like, I think it's nice that his like bisexuality isn't played as something that is like frowned upon. Like everyone's kind of like, oh, like he hooked up with a guy, and everyone's cool with it. And I do like that aspect of them taking something that the movie put forward and something that the original text puts forward, that as far as I can tell, again, I haven't seen the 1966 version, is completely, it's kind of taken out of that. So I do like that, like, the movie simply adds that back in, and it seems that subsequent productions have latched onto that and tried to evolve it and make it better. But one thing I do get from Adam Godley in the, stage version is I think he is genuinely attracted to who Sally is, like, outside of the ambivalence of her. And sometimes I would watch Michael York and I'm just like, I don't think he likes her that much. Like, I don't know. Like, it seemed like he stayed with her out of some sense of duty, I guess. But I think their like lack of sexual chemistry was the hardest part for me, because they just seemed like kind of okay friends, and he was annoyed with her half the time. Anyway, that's my issue. But I really think that, I think the Adam Godley performance as Cliff in the Sam Mendes version is like incredible. He's so good. And I think one of the other things I wanted to touch on, because I don't know, I don't have a ton to say about like the Nazism of it all that hasn't been said by people who are much smarter than me. So, and I think that is like the show is about what happens when you turn your head the other way, right? I think anyone who watches it knows that. So I wanted to spend like a little more time talking about like this kind of stuff in the context of all of that. Because the Nazis didn't just go after Jewish people, right? Like they went after gay people. They went after anyone who didn't fit like an Aryan narrative, right? So there's a lot like to be said about the sexual qualities of the show. So I did want to touch on like kind of the trans representation in here, because I and a part of why I took off a little bit for the stage version is I think there is like, especially in the movie, there's a lot of making men in dresses the butt of the joke.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think that's unrealistic or whatever, but it's still like a little, like you watch it and you're kind of like, okay, like, you know, like this is like a pretty progressive show. And I'll get to the thing about the ladies and two ladies, because I think that was an attempt to kind of complicate the desire behind the show. But like in the movie, there's a woman named Elsie who is a trans woman. It uses another word in her description in the Wikipedia page. I'm not going to say it, but she like uses the urinal next to Brian. And I don't actually think this part is played for laughs. I read some report of it that seemed to think it was, but I thought it was kind of played for a way to be like, oh, Brian likes dudes, because he looks at her penis. Like, and he like obviously checks it out. So I thought that wasn't really played for laughs as much as played as an indicator to the audience that this man likes men
or
likes penises. But I can definitely see,
which I have a really, sorry, can I give a thought real quick?
Yeah.
Okay.
Interrupt. One.
No, you can't.
I'm kidding.
Okay, I think it's really interesting that you say that, because I totally agree. I think it's like an indication that he likes men, and that's where the transphobia comes in, because this is clearly a trans woman.
Yes.
And here's the thing that I think is like holding back Cabaret from being as progressive as I think it wants to be, is that I think that Cabaret really, really heavily promotes fluidity in sex and gender, but I think that it promotes it still within the confines of the gender you're assigned at birth. So it's like, you can be a man that looks and dresses like a woman and lives your truth like that, but you're still a man. And I think that that, I mean, I really think part of that is just like truly a product of the time. And like, I'm really, I think I talked about this in the last episode, I'm really not a fan of that defense of older, more like older shows, but I don't know. I like, if we look, it's in 2021, the like lack of understanding on a mainstream level of transgender people, like the way that had to have been, and that is after like what I would argue is 10 of the most progressive years for the queer community we have ever had, like thinking back to 2011 where we were and how it was like common and acceptable to think gay marriage was wrong. And now that's just like a non-starter for the most part. Like, I don't know. I am tempted to not forgive the show, but to like just put that in the context of what we're watching. Because I do think it has this statement to make about fluidity and everything's a spectrum. I just think it like is literally incapable of breaking from the like shackles of gender.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about like when we talk about not wanting to use the it's a product of its time excuse for Grease, it's a little different, because it's like I think Cabaret is like actively trying to do something and say something.
Yes.
And I think when you're talking about being confined by like the not, like you said, like we're still like, I know I'm still like learning about like the experience of trans people every day and like the LGBTQ community every day. So, like, if you think about where these people were in the 70s, I don't know. Like, obviously, they were trying to, like,
learn and trying to put words,
sure. Yeah. The world felt a lot bigger. But, yeah, so there is another moment that I just want to touch on in the movie that's not great. There's a moment where Sally gets Elsie to take her place flirting with a man, and then they make fun of her. So, like, Sally got out of it by telling the man that she is a touch of syphilis. And then she says something to the effect of, wait till he learns what Elsie's got. And it's, like, obviously played for laughs, and it's just not funny. And then in the stage show, I do want to touch on the ladies and two ladies a little bit, because I think that was an attempt to, as a reminder, in a few revivals since, one of the ladies in two ladies has been played by a man in drag. And I think you can read it as like an attempt to complicate desire more. Cause I do think this show is also kind of founded around like complicated desires and people not understanding what they desire and that kind of stuff and ambivalence toward desire and all that. But I think you could read this as like, we're trying to confuse you because you think that that's hot, but that in itself is like, I don't know how I feel about that in 2021 or in any year, to be quite honest. And there are also like, I think like I've never seen this done, but from what I've read, they clue you into the fact that like sometimes like the person will sing in a much lower voice or like, so they like try to clue you into the fact that it is not a woman. And I think that in itself is like not a good thing to put forth because trans women are women. Anyway, so I think like the show has, So I think the show has tried to, again, like I said, this show is so interesting to me because I think the different iterations like really try to delve into it more. And I think this show just has like an endless supply of content and creativity to come out of it. And it's really dark. And I didn't even get into like half of the shit. I didn't get into the ending, which is absolutely harrowing. Yeah, it's just great. But I have talked on and on and on. So
I would love to see a production where where MC is blatantly and explicitly non-binary, because you can't, first of all, you can't tell me that that's not the case, period.
Well, that's what I think they're kind of going for with Joel Grey, but he's a man, you know?
I feel like it's, like, it's fluid in the confines of you're still a man or you're still a woman, and I would just love to see a modern adaptation of it that throws that aside. And is really explicitly like, because I think cabaret has the potential to be, and honestly could already be to some people. I just don't think it does it clear enough. I think it has the potential to be like a non-binary, like mecca of a show in terms of representation. Because again, the whole point to me of so much of this and all the commentary on gender is that gender is a performance. And gender is something that we internalize and therefore like externalize in how we present ourselves to the world. And to me, the show is basically like, fuck that. Like, be you. Yeah. Don't worry about that confine. But then it still worries about it. Yeah. and I just want to throw that out and have a non-binary MC and have that be the point of what they're doing here.
And I think the argument about its like preoccupation with it or like worrying about it would be like, okay, it's in 1930 in Nazi Germany and people were worried about it, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think you can still, and I think I could see that easily happening. I feel like this show is like open to interpretation enough and that kind of thing that someone
could
easily do that. And still kind of keep those, you know, insecurities and worries like running as an undercurrent. But Yeah, it'd be great. I really love Cabaret. I think I love the movie too. I think it's just great. But
is that everything? Should I move on to Kinky Boots?
I have some other stuff that's just like more fun, but let's do Kinky Boots for a bit.
Okay. And then we can come back to that.
Yeah.
Okay, Kinky Boots. So I wanna give my headline up front. Which is that I fucking adore this show. and honestly, like, I think that if I were coming at it from a less critical perspective and more just like theater goer, like watching the show, it's a 10 out of 10 for me. I really, really love the show. It like totally hits me in the feels. I like sent a picture to Sammy like 3 minutes in and I was already sobbing. I think that it is a little sloppy at times in terms of like the technical perspective of musical theater. But in terms of like the vibe and the message and the like fun of it, it's a 10 for me. So I'll start. I want to talk about like, I think some of its strengths, and then I'll go to some of my qualms with it. To start off, I want to say that so the book was written by Harvey Fierstein, and the music and lyrics were written by none other than our queen, Cyndi Lauper. First and only Broadway show that she has written for. She was in Three Penny Opera in like 2005 or six, but yeah, her debut in writing for Broadway. She did end up winning the Tony Award for Best Score, and fun fact, she's the first woman to win the Best Score like alone, so like not as part of a team of like, you know, multiple people. And only one other woman has done this since, and it was 2019 with Hadestown, and Anais Mitchell, who did that.
Jesus.
Kind of crazy. It's always so frustrating. I feel like that's happened so many times on the show. Like Fun Home, it's still the only show with, I guess, Fun Home and The Prom are like the two only Broadway shows that have lesbian protagonists.
I know.
Stuff like
It's getting to
that.
the point, like you hear like, oh, the first name the marginalized community here has done this, and it's getting to the point where it's like the first now, it like
Yeah,
feels
it's
like
like
you're
no lo I mean
excited, but it's like
you have to
depressing.
celebrate because it's like okay, it happened, but like fuck, that's so
Yeah, that's
bad.
bad.
That's how I feel about that statement. Anyway, congrats, Cyndi, you deserve it. Okay, a couple miscellaneous thoughts before I get into more deep stuff. Drag queen ensemble of a musical,
Love it.
truly unparalleled, truly. Like drag queens are musical theater energy, like drag queens and musical theater to me are the same energy. And the way that, like, in the two shows I saw live, and also when I was preparing for this, fun fact everyone, you can watch Kinky Boots professionally recorded on Broadway HD. And you can just get a free week trial. The energy levels, the fierceness of it all, like it's just incredible, and it makes me really, really wish that drag played a bigger part in musical theater, because I can really only think of like two show a cabaret. I know we're counting it as drag and there are drag components in it, but I wouldn't say that cabaret is a show about
Yeah,
drag by any
we
means.
just made it
But
like
I
a
can only think of
category.
Kinky Boots and what's that Everything About Jamie show? Something about Jamie, everything about Jamie. It's, oh
Yeah, I
God,
don't
I'm
know.
gonna get crucified by Gen Z musical theater stands. That's like Gen Z's like Spring Awakening and Next to Normal, I feel
Oh
like.
my God, do I
It's
need
like a
to learn about
huge
this?
cult. Yeah, it's a
Oh man.
huge cult musical.
Ugh.
A movie's coming out in a couple years, I think.
I'm so old. That's
I
okay.
know the music is incredible. Definitely check it out. But it's also about drag queens. And we just need more of that. Another thing I want to say is that one thing I just really love about this show, and I always just have to point out when things like this happen, even though it kind of like the woman winning the score, it doesn't feel like that big of a deal, but it's so rare that it is. I really love that Nicola is Charlie's girlfriend at the beginning, and they move to London together, and eventually they break up. I really, really love that she's not a villain. That she is seen as like she has her own agency, and like at the end of the day, Charlie is not willing to sacrifice his like tie to this company, this family company, which is really, I think, a tie to his family. He's not willing to sacrifice that for her, and I think that's fair for Charlie. But also, Nicola is not going to put up with that, and like she wants to have someone who's going to be there for her, and she's not painted as like this bitchy, like, oh my, like the audience is not like, oh my God, he needs to break up with her, which I
Yeah,
feel like is the
I
case
liked
in
her.
so many movies where you end up with a different person and you had a relationship at the start. Oftentimes you just paint them as a villain that the crowd is cheering for you to break up with them. And I love that Nicola does it. Nicola is the one that breaks up with Charlie. So just a couple of really great things. And also the first song I absolutely adore. I think it's an emotional roller coaster and it does such a good job of setting the stage of the two main characters and what their passions and limitations are. The show starts off by showing young Charlie and young Simon. And like you see young Charlie kind of being like forced into this mold of being a shoemaker like his dad, but that's not what he wants. You see Simon like boxing, which is what his dad wants him to do, but he like puts on this pair of red heels and is like walking around the stage. It makes me sob every time. It's so beautiful. Okay, just some miscellaneous thoughts. So the biggest theme, and don't get me wrong, I think gender again in this show is a massive theme, but I actually think that the biggest theme in this show to me is like overcoming A, expectations set out for you by family, and B, overcoming grief. Because both Charlie and Simon, those are the two things that bond them together more than anything else, is that both of their dads, they both have daddy issues, both of their dads like want them to be this specific mold of a person that they just aren't, and they have to like prove to themselves that they have that agency to not do that. And the second thing is they both have a pretty immense amount of grief to overcome. Charlie's dad dies pretty unexpectedly. And that's when he goes back home to the factory and starts dealing with all of that. And Simon's dad is still alive, but there's so many layers to this. You find out like about
He's
halfway
sad.
through that like Simon's dad basically rejects him for being gay and for pursuing this the art of drag. And it's really, really sad. Simon opens up to Charlie about that. And then at the end, you see Simon performing at this nursing home. And it's like this like dual, like it's funny that a drag queen is performing at a nursing home and singing this like belty anthem that's like a very ballady. But you listen to the lyrics and it is like heart crushing, and the whole lyrics of this song, Hold Me in Your Heart, are like it's Lola forgiving her dad for rejecting her and like making her life a hell, to be quite honest. And at the end of the song, you see Lola walk to one person in the nursing home, and you find out you like realize that it's her dad and that he is clearly dealing with like maybe dementia or something. He does not recognize that it's his son, but they have this moment and like the dad like holds Lola's hand on the shoulder. It's so beautiful. And that's to me what this show is about. It's not about queerness or drag like first. To me, it's about overcoming grief and overcoming the role that has been set for you to play. I also think that one thing I love about this show is that Lola slash Simon is not a punchline. They are not like they are, I would say, like the wisest character in the show. And I think Charlie learns so much from Lola. Like obviously, okay, I don't want to like diminish the impact that the death of Charlie's father had on him, because that's extremely difficult for anyone. But I will say Charlie is being like really fucking dramatic about the shoe factory situation.
Oh,
Like after
yeah.
he's kind of started to cope, he's being really dramatic, and they have like he has this conversation with Lola. I think it's actually as Simon. And that's when Simon drops the ball that his dad disowned him and does not have a relationship with him anymore. And that is to me when there's a really a turning point in this friendship between them. At first, Charlie is nice to Lola, but you can definitely tell that Charlie does not understand drag or what Lola is doing. And I think that this is a moment where Charlie is able to kind of see what's happening here and also relate back to what's happening to himself with needing to fulfill this role. And they have this like really beautiful duet moment, and Lola sings, "We're the same Charlie boy, you and me." Charlie from Northampton meet Simon from Clapton. And that's actually the first time in the show that you learn Lola's name, Simon, and that Charlie does as well. And I don't know. I just love that. I love that they're able to help each other overcome these things together. So yeah, that's one big theme. I think it does it really, really well. Second thing I want to say is that a second theme slash just like thing that I love about this show, getting this much insight into a queer black person, having them be the wise character with the difficult past, having them being the person that has overcome so many things, like it literally just brings me to tears when I watch this show. And I'm like literally choking right now, like thinking about it. Like it's just so, we need these stories told. And like the only, I would say that since Kinky Boots has come out, it's improved drastically. That not to say that there's not a huge way to go. But when Kinky Boots came out in 2013, there were not shows with queer black protagonists, musical or otherwise. Like, I cannot think of a movie or TV show or anything that had a queer black person as the lead. And I think that when we do see them, we're so used to seeing them as like the butt of the joke or the sidekick or something like that. And it just is so heartwarming to me to get this kind of insight. I love that Lola is simultaneously extremely confident, but also very sensitive. And I feel like you can see, like you can, as an audience member, you can literally see the dents in her armor and the circumstances in her life that have led her to build up this confidence and persona to the world. Like you can see that she has been hurt many, many, many times before. And because of that, she is like, I'm gonna hurt you first, but like, she's like, I'm in control. You are looking at me, like all of this stuff. And that to me makes it also so much more heartbreaking when you see her being torn down by Don, who's one of the factory workers, and
Fucking
Charlie, who
Don.
has this big temper tantrum in the second act and is a complete asshole to her.
I think I was gonna say, and I this is something that didn't bother me too much because I think like most of what brings Charlie and Lola together is, like you said, like that shared understanding over grief, and like that's where they finally started to have common ground. And I also don't think this would have bothered me as much if this wasn't one of, like you said, like one of the only examples we have of something with a queer black person at the center of it. But I did feel like, and maybe this is like more on my mind because I don't know, but I felt like a lot of the onus was put on Lola to do a lot of teaching. And I think that, like, while possibly realistic, is also a plot device that like could take away from some development for the character herself. You know what I mean? And I didn't, again, it didn't bother me too much because I think like ultimately she was a well-rounded character and we knew a lot
And
about
I think
her and
also
it,
we have to learn a lot from her.
I
But
know, but it
also,
was
should
something I
she
was
be
like cognizant
responsible?
of.
Yeah,
It was that
exactly.
was a,
Yeah, well, okay, on that note, moving on to so why I gave this show an 8.5 out of 10, even though I fucking love this show. Like, it's one of my favorite musicals. Some reasons that I think technically it's not as good. Number one, to me, the biggest like glaring thing about this show is I just think the resolution is so sloppy and it doesn't feel genuine. Basically, like in the second act, Charlie has this like mental breakdown and is like just a complete asshole to everyone at the factory. And then Lola comes and is talking to him and he tears her to shreds. Like he calls her an oddity. He implies that like once they get rich with this business, she won't have to feel like she has to do drag anymore to be accepted. She can just be herself, like totally not understanding that this is herself. He says some like extremely horrible things to her and like doesn't apologize really. He calls
No,
her on
he
the
gets off
phone and is like,
scot-free.
he like literally doesn't have to face his actions with either the factory workers or Lola. And that's infuriating to me.
Yeah.
Because he's this like privileged white man who like for the most part is good-ish in the show and like a decent person, but then at this one point like really delves into his toxic masculinity and like anger and just lets it loose on everyone surrounding him. And I like he didn't really have to go. That was like his low moment, but his low moment was that he lashed out at everyone, not him having to deal with the consequences of that. So that's really frustrating. And he like leaves Lola a couple voicemails, and that's the extent of any semblance of an apology that you see.
Yeah. And I think like going off of that, they do like a lot of, and I don't think he's a bad guy. Like, I think they do a good job at being like, this is an outburst. This is wrong. But then it's just like, well, we know you're not a bad guy, so we forgive you. And I'm like, no,
it doesn't work like that. Shit. Yeah. Like, you can be a good person, make a heinous mistake, but you have to own up to it, and you have to, you know, make do for your actions.
It's kind of like, he had a bad day. It's like, well. Yeah.
The second like qualm I have with this show is I do feel like sometimes it like oversimplifies the bigotry issue and makes it like all about the individual. And I just like, we just know that bigotry is so much more than that. It's not like, if anything, I think bigotry stems from the mindset of individualism. And I think that this show kind of shows it as like, oh, Don is this like macho man who is a dick to Lola. But then once he sees that Lola is actually good at boxing, they have a boxing match, then now she earns his respect because she is good at both traditionally masculine and feminine things. And it's like, I think that the show could have done a better job of really getting into the systemic layer of this. That's not just like Don's an asshole and Charlie has an outburst and like says some really homophobic and rude things to Lola.
Yeah, and I was going into that boxing match, I was extremely confused the whole time because, like, I think I texted you this. This is, like, besides the point. But it felt like they had to divide everybody up equally. And so, like, there's a scene right before that where pretty much every woman who works at the shoe factory is like, we like Lola, we're on her side, like, blah, blah. And they have, like, that cute little dancing scene. But then all of a sudden, there's like one woman who up until that point and the rest of the show, she's like maybe like my favorite side character of like the people who work at the shoe factory. And for some reason, she's just like on Dawn's team and she's like, yeah, beat the shit out of her. And like, Where did that come from?
Yeah.
It was so weird. It was like she was playing a different person. So weird.
Okay, two other quick qualms I have. This is just a really personal preference, but I really wish that we had seen drag king representation as well in the group of drag queens. I think that like one thing media does a lot is first of all only give the spotlight to drag queens, and like I think that's a symptom of the patriarchy. Like even when it comes to like breaking down gender barriers, the men who are dressing as women are the ones who receive accolades, and the women performers who are doing this, like, are not, like, how many drag kings can you name, you know? Like, I like, follow some on Instagram, but, like, that they haven't broken into mainstream pop culture like queens have, and I wish that we had seen at least one. I would prefer more, but
yeah,
at least one drag king. The last thing is, I really fucking wish that they had given Lauren a bigger role. So, Lauren is Charlie's, like, love interest post Nicola, and they end up together, and Lauren, the whole show, you see her falling head over heels for Charlie. Like, she knows what's happening. She's like, oh fuck, not again, I'm falling for another guy. She is like an incredible comedic relief, and she's such a fun character in this show. You like never, I really don't, I was like looking for this when I watched it, and I really don't think that Charlie shows a single sign of
No.
affection for her until literally the very, very end when they get together in
I
the
agree.
closing song. And I'm just like, one, I wish we had gotten to see more of Lauren because she was so funny and such a good character. And I wish that they had built up something between them that wasn't just like Lauren doing her duties as this factory worker for her boss, Charlie.
Yeah, it feels like she, and even this, I don't think they give too much lip service to. She just kind of likes him, but they at least make a little bit of an attempt to be like, oh, he's acting more confident, and she's attracted to that. And he seems to just like her because he finds out she likes him.
Because he's single
So,
now and she's
yeah.
cute.
Yeah, she is so funny, though. I
Yeah.
love History of Wrong Guys so much. It is
Yes.
so
Shout
funny.
out to Annaleigh Ashford
Oh.
for destroying that and originating this role, because she really kills it.
Oh, amazing. I do love that song. No, I agree with kind of all of what you said. I do think, like, at the end of the day, this, like, I cried at the end. Like,
Yeah.
when the little boys come out again, I was like,
Oh my God,
oh my
yeah.
God. Yeah, it's just nice to have, like, something that at its core with, like, these issues, it does still kind of preach the love and acceptance that maybe we need. It's nice.
Yes, I agree. The part where the younger selves come in at the end,
Oh my
for
God.
me, that is like, it instantly breaks me, but it also to me makes me feel like another theme of this show is like healing your inner child, and that is a theme to me that goes in line with overcoming grief and expectations. And like by the end, I really do feel like, okay, 100,000% Lola has. I think even Charlie to an extent was less likable for me, but I do think he
Yeah.
still does some of that work. But yeah, overall, like I said, there are some technical issues. There are some things I wish that they had done differently. But overall, I think that like this is just such a fun show that the message is just like love and acceptance and
Yeah.
be you. And I absolutely love that. And I love
Yeah.
Kinky Boots.
Oh my gosh. I think it's interesting we chose like one show that is like go have a good time and another show that is like go contemplate political ambivalence.
Yeah.
Go contemplate the dangers of fascism.
Yeah, I definitely don't think Kinky Boots makes you do that. You know, like
No,
that's, and I
it
think
does
that's a lot
not.
of what I'm saying with the individual, like the
Yeah.
Kinky Boots, it's like, don't be an asshole, not like, think about the systems that have led Lola
Yeah.
to be in this place.
Think about it's like Cabaret's like not don't be a Nazi, but think about how your actions actively contribute to the Nazi agenda or your inaction. Yeah. Oh man. Okay, I just wanted to go through like some things I thought were fun and then I'll do my limited bop list because this is one that I do think I just have to listen to all the way through. Because it like all works together. But I wanted to go through some notable players, specifically for Sally and the MC, because I was losing my mind at some of these. And like some of them I really want to see, and some of them I think are hilarious. So Sally Bowles, so of course you've got Liza Minnelli, Judi Dench as a young woman,
Cats
played Sally
Queen.
Bowles, Cats Queen, notable Cats performer Judi Dench. Jane Horrocks, who's in the Sam Mendes version, who people think she's bad. I think that's a bad take. She's
I think that
wonderful.
that's a very bad take.
She's her rendition of Cabaret is like the most perfectly unhinged thing I've ever watched in my entire life. It is so uncomfortable, which it's supposed to be. It's just great. I love it. Natasha Richardson, again, rest in peace. Jennifer Jason Leigh played Sally, which I personally would love to see, like thinking her about some of her movie roles, like In the Cut or Hudsucker Proxy. I think she'd be really great. Susan Egan of Beauty and the Beast fame played Sally
Ooh.
Bowles. Terry Hatcher of Desperate Housewives fame. Molly Ringwald played Sally
What?
Bowles. I know. Brooke
She lives in the same town
Shields.
as my boyfriend, as my
Oh my
boyfriend's
God.
family, like where he grew up.
Does he know her?
No.
Oh, damn it. okay, and then there was a run on Broadway recently that was Michelle Williams, who I would actually kill to see. And it makes me think of Fosse Verdon, because that was like one of my favorite shows of the past few years. And she plays Von Verdon, and Bob Fosse obviously directed Cabaret. And when I was watching, side note, but when I was watching the movie, there's a scene. Have you watched Fosse Verdon?
No.
It's really good. You should. It's very
I
good.
should.
But so there's a scene in that movie where Bob Fosse, who's like notorious like cheater, was directing Cabaret, and they were trying to find the right monkey costume for If You Could See Her Through My Eyes, and he's like very particular about like what he wants. Gwen Verdon was there because he was also like extremely codependent and like could not work if she wasn't there to help. But she flew back to get the correct monkey head and then like flew back to Germany, like went back home and then flew back to Germany.
Oh
And I
my
don't know if this
God.
is exactly how it happened, but in the TV show, she walks in on him cheating on her, like holding this monkey head. And that's all I could think about. I mean, I was thinking about a lot of other stuff because that number is like purely horrifying, but I was just like, Michelle Williams holding this monkey head. But anyway.
Have you seen Jazzy Chaperone? It reminds me of that monkey motif. Oh, monkey, monkey, monkey,
That's what
you
she was
broke
singing when she walked in the
my
Oh, yeah.
heart.
Anyway, I love Michelle Williams. Like, I think she's one of my favorite actresses ever, and I would really love to see her be Sally Bowles. But then that same Broadway run, Emma Stone took over the role, and Sienna Miller took over the role, which I think all three of them would have been great. And then the one I thought was funniest was Vanna White played
What?
Sally Bowles.
What the fuck?
Notably of Wheel of Fortune fame. I had absolutely no idea.
I
I
didn't
tried to
either.
find more information. I really couldn't. I would love an oral history of that. And then
Or
I
a
just wanted to go
videography
through,
history of
yeah,
it.
I would love to watch it, please. And then some fun MC ones. So you obviously got Joel Grey and Alan Cumming. Michael C. Hall, Dexter, play the MC. That's
Oh.
correct, right? Let me make sure I'm not wrong when I
I
say that.
am not a Dexter watcher, but I
I watched the first season.
believe it. I also would not use me as a fact checker, considering how many dumb things I said incorrectly on season one.
Yes, that's Dexter. Thank God. I was
I
like,
still
please
can't
don't
get
help
over
me.
the who are the two people I confused? That was just
Oh,
like
Leslie Odom
unacceptable.
Jr. and Lamar
Okay, that was a
Odom.
miss.
No, it was Tim Rice and
Tim Rice, that was the bad one.
Tim Curry, right?
Yeah. Rice curry,
Wow.
same vibe.
Same thing. Oh my God. Okay, so Michael C. Hall and then Raul Esparza.
Ooh, I would love to see
I
that.
know. Neil Patrick
Raul
Harris,
Esparza
which
does not get the credit he deserves.
I don't think so
Hot take.
either. He like deserves multiple awards. Every time he's in
Yeah.
something, I'm like, this is gonna be great. He's
That's
in the
it,
TV show
yeah.
Hannibal. He's great. Anyway, Adam Pascal, which like that tracks to me. Norbert Leo Butz, and then the one I thought was the funniest is John Stamos.
Wow, I don't think I would want to see that. I'm not a John Stamos hater by any means, but that sounds weird to me.
It reminds me when he was that dentist in Glee and they did Rocky Horror, and that's like all I can think about. Anyway, so like I said, for bops, like this is the kind of thing I think I just have to listen through the whole thing. But if I had to pick out like favorite songs, it'd be Willkommen, great opener. Mein Herr, which was written for the movie, and now they perform usually in the stage version. I love Two Ladies. I think it's really funny and kind of scary. Maybe This Time is iconic. Cabaret at the end, great song. And Money, which is also written for the movie, is a great song that I danced in once upon a time. Yes, and that's
Those of
it.
you who
That's
didn't
all I
know,
got.
Sammy's a dancer first and a singer and actor fourth.
Yes, I am an absolutely marvelous dancer. Please
Okay,
shout
you
me
are a good dancer. That
out.
wasn't shade, but
I'm
she's not
okay.
a dancer first.
I can move. I can move, just not primarily the thing I'm great at. Okay. All right. That's all I got.
Okay, I'll do my bop list and then we can recreate. And I would be remiss not to talk. I'm not gonna like go on about it, but just like Billy Porter, period, on this show, he won the Tony, deservedly so. I think Annaleigh Ashford is fucking phenomenal as Lauren and has two really notable replacements. Taylor Lautenman. Yeah, she played Lauren and that was actually the last thing she did before Mean Girls. Don't quote me on that one, y'all. That's,
Tim
I
Curry.
Say that and it's
Tim Rice.
And then Kirsten Maldonado from Pentatonix.
Oh.
That was her Broadway debut playing Lauren.
Interesting. Cool.
Okay, bop list. Price and Sun theme / Most Beautiful Thing in the World. Opening number. Incredible. Land of Lola / honestly every single Lola song. Sex is in the Heel. History of Wrong, guys. Absolutely. Not My Father's Son. Everybody Say Yeah. For everybody listening to this, if you haven't seen Kinky Boots and if you don't have the time or mental capacity to watch it on Broadway HD, at the very least, you need to watch the Tony performance where they sing Everybody Say Yeah. There's a really cool and I think pretty inventive choreo in this show with like the, well, I don't know what they're called. They're
the
not
factory,
treadmills, but the factory,
yeah,
like
the factory
machines
line.
That move, yeah, yeah, that move things forward like a treadmill. They have like the queens and workers dancing and like doing all this stage choreo on those. It's phenomenal. What a Woman Wants, In This Corner, Soul of a Man, Hold Me in Your Heart, and then Raise You Up / Just Be. And that's my pop list.
Soul of a Man. I love that song.
Yeah, it's great.
All right. Should we recreate a little bit?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So mine is going to be kind of simple this week, and it's a little more serious. It has been. But I was thinking, since there are so many versions of this, we could, like, make a combo cabaret, like, and put them all together a little bit and try to, like, make what I think would be, like, the complete version. I don't know if that makes sense. But so here we go. And you can help me out, too, because I think hearing your gender fluid idea for the MC, I might change to that with, like, Alan Cumming sprinkled on top. Like, mix
Ooh.
Joel Grey and Alan Cumming.
Yeah,
so let's just
yeah,
start
yeah.
there. Like, if we keep, because I don't know if this is just says something more about me, but Alan Cumming's, like, overt. Just like crotch grabbing is just
oh my
great.
God!
I think it's
Alan
perfect.
I love Joel Grey. I think Joel Grey is phenomenal in
yeah.
so many shows, but this is an Alan Cumming character. Like this is Alan
yeah.
Cumming.
Yeah,
Sorry.
And I like that, but kind of merging, maybe making that character more overtly gender fluid, like you said, or non-binary, would be
mm-hmm.
a cool thing to do.
I think so too.
And then. I'll just start back at the top. I hopped down a little bit to get to that. But I think I like having that Max character in the stage, like in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I like the love triangle that exists. And I like we discuss like perhaps like the implications that might have about like queerness. But I like this idea of him representing the ambivalence at the time, because he kind of does. And like it makes sense that Sally is extremely attracted to that. And I like the fact that like the Brian or Cliff character has to struggle with, I am attracted to that opulence and ambivalence, but I hate it at the same time. So I like that like tension, and I think it makes sense in the context of the themes of the show. And then Cliff characterization. So I think I would like the characterization somewhere in between Michael York, who played Brian in the movie, and Adam Godley's characterization of Cliff in the stage show. So I think Michael York plays the character with a lot of moral righteousness, and not that the character doesn't inherently have that baked in, and not that like moral righteousness in the face of fascism is not a good thing, but I think that Michael York plays it like very closed off, and I think that Adam Godley opens it up and is like a bit more softened, and I think he actually has an intimate connection with Sally, and I think Michael York's uppityness is like a little too much sometimes. Like I don't even think he likes her that much. I think I said that before. So I think like kind of leaning more Adam Godley-ish, but like keeping Michael York's kind of rendition of how he feels in the context of that love triangle, if that makes sense. Like kind of
yeah.
merging them a little bit, leaning Adam Godley. And then I want to keep the love triangle, like I said, because I think that Max's symbol and everything Cliff hates is good. But I wonder if like adding in the nods that the Sam Mendes version gives to Cliff's bisexuality and his like comfort with it could like take away maybe some of the like read that you possibly could have of him like hating Max and like therefore hating some like queer part of himself. Like maybe if you were more open about like his, like, past dalliances with men, his past relationships with men, it would not read quite that way.
Yeah.
And then I think Fräulein Schneider and Herr Schultz should stay because they get their cute little pineapple song, and I think that their love story is much more, like, riveting and much more compelling than the Natalia and Fritz story that you get in the actual movie. Because they, like, get married and they're fine, and I don't know. I think, like, the themes of the show work much better with, like, giving you Fräulein Schneider, who is in love with this man and is still complicit in, like, the ambivalence to what's going on, you know? And he is, to some extent, like, when they throw, like, a block through her window or whatever, he says, like, oh, it's just dumb kids, don't worry about it. And, like, everyone is complicit to this thing. And I think the Natalia and Fritz storyline doesn't add that as much as the Schneider and Schultz storyline does. And I think, so the other big thing the movie does is it takes out the smuggler, Ernst Ludwig. And I think he should stay, because I think that adds, like, an interesting element to Cliff's character as well, because Cliff in the stage show, like, with the smuggler is, like, way more inclined to make an easy buck. Like, kind of do something a little, like, morally ambiguous to make an easy buck than Brian is. So I like kind of keeping the moral ambiguity to Cliff's character, which I think is a little sucked out in the movie. And then I think perhaps keeping the character of Elsie, but not making her the butt of the joke all the time would be good. Like, perhaps giving her a little more to do. And then keeping Jane Horrocks' performance of Cabaret forever, because it is the gold standard, in my opinion.
I agree.
It is absolutely perfect.
That's putting your heart into a performance.
That is literally leaving it all on the stage.
Yeah, it's still there.
Holy shit. Please go watch it. If you can't watch Cabaret, it's on YouTube. Like, it just, like, you can, like, Google it. It's in parts. But, like, just watch her do that. It's mm-hmm. crazy. It's amazing. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I love the combo and the best of all worlds. Yeah, best of all worlds yeah. for Cabaret. Okay, mine is less serious. okay, for some context, what I wanted to do, I'm not gonna lie, I really struggled at thinking of a recreate for this one.
Too.
It took me so, okay, yeah. so long. But I wanted to, I was like, okay, what am I confident talking about? I am a RuPaul's Drag Race expert. I've seen every single season of US, Canada, UK, Thailand. I'm about to start Holland. That's the only season I haven't watched. I've seen most seasons twice and some seasons like 5+ times. So I know what I'm talking about with Drag Race. So since this show's about drag, I thought it would be interesting to see what other variations of the story of Kinky Boots we could do with if boots aren't the central focus. So like other drag components. Mm-hmm. And then I'm coming up with different names for what the show would be called. And then I also wanted to just offer up for any Drag Race stands out there, a queen from Drag Race that I think would be like emblematic of this new version of the show based Ooh. Off what they have to offer.
Okay.
So Kinky Boots, obviously about boots. we're just going to keep that one. I don't even think RuPaul is necessarily like a boot queen by any mean of the word, but just as like the standard and the original version, the way that she has launched drag, I'm going to have her.
Sure.
Second Kinky Boots, titillating tits. So this is about a factory that makes tits. And Amazing. I would have Jimbo, the drag clown from Drag Race Canada in this because she has the best tits out of any queen. They're always, like, extremely over-exaggerated and perky, and I love that. Peculiar panties. So this would be, like, I know panties anyone can wear, but this would be specifically for helping queens tuck. Okay. If you don't know what tucking is, look it up. And the queen that I think has the best tuck is Aquaria from season 10, so I would have her in the lead here. Next one, we have eccentric wigs. So wigs for drag queens. Factory makes wigs. This queen, I don't necessarily think is known for her wigs that she wore on the show, but she owns a wig company and makes wigs for a lot of queens, so that's why I'm doing this. And that's Blair St. Clair, also mm-hmm. from season 10. Next one we have exotic nails. So this is like nails made for queens. They're really weird, Gucci, campy, all of the above. And I think the queen best known for nails is Alaska from season 5 and winner of All Stars 2. She always has like claws on. Fabulous dresses. I couldn't. I need a better name for this one, but whatever. Fabulous dresses. I was like, who's a fashion queen? And for me, that is Miss Naomi Smalls from season 8 and All Stars 4. So fabulous dresses. Saucy mug. So that would be like a makeup factory making makeup for drag queens. And by a landslide, the queen that I think has the best makeup skills is Gottmik from this current season 13. And then lastly, we have smashing purses. So this is extravagant purses for drag queens. And who else would we have in this but Bob the Drag Queen, winner of season 8? And that's the extent of what I did, but I also, this is like, I didn't do anything inventive here, but I like that all of these work for the song Sex is in the Heel. So you could do the sex is in the tit, or the sex is in the tuck, the sex is in the wig, the sex is in the nail, the sex is in the dress, the sex is in the mug, the sex is in the purse. It really works with all of it.
Missing
So
one.
whatever your like trademark component is of drag, you can sing the sex is in the heel to it with it replaced. And that's
Amazing.
it. That's my recreate.
I love it. It was good. I feel like we've also kind of like switched back and forth between serious and not serious,
Yeah,
which
I
is
love that.
nice.
We can't
That's
always be
perfect.
serious. Also,
Always
sometimes
on
I
the
feel
same
like the
page.
serious ones are when I am like, for me, I'm like, something legitimately needs to change about this show and I want to
Exactly.
talk about it. And
Yeah.
like, I mentioned what I think are some flaws of the show, but I don't think that anything needs drastic overhauling.
Yeah.
So I just want to have some fun with it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Wow, that was a really fun episode.
It was. It always is.
I'm really excited about next
I
week.
am. This is maybe the one I'm most excited for of the season.
Oh my God.
I also bet this is probably gonna, the next one's gonna be our least listened to show, and I don't care about
Absolutely. I don't give a shit. I was so excited. It might be 4 hours long, who knows? Should we give the category?
Yeah, let's give it.
All right. Do you
Okay,
want to
drum
say it?
roll. Yeah, I'll say it.
Drum roll. Bada 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 bada.
I'm a motherfucking star kid. So
Yes!
category is Star Kid. If you're unfamiliar, if you know A Very Potter musical, that was their first production. Darren Criss and his friends from University of Michigan created this group called Star Kid, and they make a lot of musicals that are like really weird and dumb, but like I think amazing and hilarious. And they have, yeah, incredible. All of their shows are free to watch on YouTube, so you can literally watch all of them. We're not going to tell you which two shows we're doing next week yet, but you'll find out when you tune into the next episode.
Soon enough. Wow.
Soon enough, not soon enough.
Oh. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at RateDebate1. You can follow us
And you
on
can follow us on
Instagram.
everything else at Rate Debate Recreate.
Yes, everything else, Instagram, TikTok. I think that's what we got.
That's it.
That's everything else. All right, bye.
Bye, we love you.
Love y'all.
Rate Debate.